Welcome to the Fix Podcast here on thesportsvirus.com, featuring pitching mechanics expert Angel Borelli. I'm your host, Joe Castellano, also the host of the San Francisco Giants Inside China Basin podcast and the San Francisco 49ers Extra podcast. The Fix is your bi-weekly show focusing on pitching mechanics, injury prevention, and peak performance on the mound. Angel Borelli has a master's degree in sports science and has been a strength and conditioning coach for 35 years. For the past 20 years, she's worked specifically on investigating pitching deliveries. Pitchers from Little League on up to the big leagues seek out Angel for solutions that will help take them to the next level. She also works with pitchers who are recovering from injuries by giving them customized training programs that will get them back on the mound, and she finds and corrects the flaws that led to the injury in the first place. Education, solutions, and troubleshooting here on the Fix Podcast, also available on the iTunes Podcast app. And welcome to the Fix here in mid-August as we get ready for the stretch drive in Major League Baseball. And we'll be talking about some of the pitchers that have been traded to teams that are in contention. Plus, later on here on the Fix, we'll be talking about off-season planning for amateur pitchers in our regular segment on velocity. And Angel, let's start with some of the pitchers that were traded and how they're contributing with their new teams. There have been some really good stories. Scott Kazmir, I saw him pitch for the Astros in the game on Tuesday at AT&T Park in San Francisco. And even though he took the loss, he gave up a couple of home runs to Brandon Belt. He still looked really sharp. And so far, his ERA with the Astros is 1.04. You have Johnny Cueto, who was great in his first home start with the Royals. He's at 2.05. David Price with the Red Hot Blue Jays, 2-0, 0.60 ERA. He's gone 15 innings, one run. But on the other side of it, you got Cole Hamels, who has struggled so far in two starts with the Rangers with a 5.93 ERA. And I know this is a small sample size, but even Matt Latos with the Dodgers, 6.30 ERA. So that opens it up to discuss the challenges of joining a new team in a pennant race. You've got a new pitching coach, a new manager, a new catcher. Everything's new, and not everybody handles that great. So how do you go about thinking about doing this the right way, especially when you can look at your delivery on video, but you do need help at the major league level? Usually somebody who's familiar with your delivery will point something out. So how do these pitchers get around that?
Well, you know, it's funny because I work mostly with college pitchers, and so and I've experienced this whole situation this summer where I've had pitchers who they were at school, they didn't do well, so now they're going to a new school. So in a sense, it's kind of like they're being traded, or they get on a summer team and the coach doesn't, you know, handle them the way they want to be handled, and I see the stress they're under, and now they're wondering what's going to happen in the fall when they go to a school. So it's interesting because pitchers from an early age, I would say past high school, because high school you're pretty set on a team. Once you get into college, this pressure to perform is always part of it, because in college it's similar to having a job, particularly if you got a scholarship and you don't want to lose it, and especially in your first year. So the thing about pitchers is that they have an amazing way that they can handle stress. And what I've seen is when they get traded or they're going into an unfamiliar situation, they'll talk about that it is uncomfortable and they'll be wondering about things. And sometimes they're excited because they wanted the trade. Sometimes they're shocked because, you know, in baseball, you're fine one day and the next time you've got a sign on your locker. I mean, it's not that cut and dry, but I think it really depends. And I know this is the difference that I see in the pitchers I work with. It depends on the scenario as to how they're going to handle it. But what I do know about most pitchers 99% of the time is the stresses they feel about it usually happen off the mound. Because pitchers that make it to that level, particularly the guys that are in the major leagues, even the guys you see that aren't doing well, these are elite athletes that are really, really good at their skill. And pitching requires so much more than just good pitching mechanics. So these guys might have the normal stresses that any man would have when his job is threatened or when he is all of a sudden demoted or promoted, and in each pitcher's head, he's got a label for it because the scenario could be different. And so it's no different than what any man would go through when something's challenging him with his profession. So, but they mostly do it off the mound. But here's the deal. If they're on the mound and they're having trouble, a lot of times what's happening is there's something going on where the pitcher was uncomfortable prior to his arriving into that scenario and hasn't quite worked it out. And you bring up such a good point that the pitchers want someone there that they know knows them and knows their delivery. Now, before teams pick up players, they do spend a lot of time looking at film. But people on this team really don't have skills to look at some of the nuances. But I think that the unfamiliarity can have an effect on some pitchers. And then again, the fact they're traded, or even if they're in a place like Cole Hamels, who's a great pitcher, pitchers have bad days. So we can't say it's just because he was traded. And as you see, so many of them are doing great because sometimes it's great to have a fresh scenario. But here's the deal. Pitchers have an unbelievable ability to get on the mound and to block things out. That's what makes them great. And when you're in baseball, because since you've been a young kid, you go to this team and this coach treats you well and you like this team or you hate this team or whatever, they're kind of used to that. So believe it or not, even though it looks bigger because they're traded, baseball pitching has that kind of flair to it where it's you never really know what's going to happen. They don't know what's going to happen on the team day by day, and they basically also don't actually always know what's going to happen with their performance because it is that type of skill, and also because what happens in the game is contingent upon not just the pitcher doing well, but the outfield, the hitting, et cetera. So sometimes the stats of a game don't always reflect exactly what's happening. So it is complicated. But these are normal human beings, and that's the take-home message here. We sometimes think pitchers aren't human and because they do have this game face quality, but they actually are. And so in situations like this, they're sort of familiar with it, but as they get older, it starts to have a different effect. I do notice that my 26-year-olds, my 25-year-olds that are looking to get, into the major league still, or even independent ball, the pressure on them is very different than an 18-year-old because baseball is a sport where the age and how much you've been through starts to weigh on you. So that's kind of what you're probably seeing. And yes, we have to give our hats off to having a job like that that really doesn't have that kind of, stability to it at all times.
Yeah, and all the pitchers I mentioned, they're all veteran guys who know what they're doing. Yeah. And as a matter of fact, you mentioned Hamels. He threw a no-hitter right before he was traded. So you have to figure that he's going to pitch a lot better than just the first two times against or with the Texas Rangers.
Yeah. And trades are sometimes things pitchers want, and we don't know what goes on behind. A pitcher can there can be some thing going on where they want to get traded. So, again, I think it's like anything in life. If it's something you want, you're happy about it. If it's something you're forced into and you wish didn't happen, it's a different situation. Most of these guys know how to wrap their brain around the new scenario because that's what being a pitcher is about. You might have one inning where you just, were lights out 1, 2, 3, and the next inning you throw 30 pitches. So, they are experts at acclimating and getting on to the next move. And so, again, I think that we'll be able to, watch Cole and see is he on a downswing here. We do know that there are sometimes pitchers who are traded from one team to another, especially one league to another, which to me is when there really seems to be issues. And that's where, because, the pitcher having to swing a bat when he didn't have to swing a bat in the American League.
Right.
Those are huge differences, particularly if he's not any good at it. Which right. if he hasn't picked up a bat in X number of years. So I think that's when we really see issues coming up. And I know a few in my head right now that never were right when they got traded to an National League team.
One of the best success stories I remember in 2008, CC Sabathia, actually looked up what he did with the Milwaukee Brewers, 11-2, 1.65 ERA. And that he was a rental. He knew that he wasn't going to stay there, but he really helped them out. And he was able to go deep into games. I remember, you know, he had high pitch counts. He was totally on board with helping out that team after that trade.
Yeah, he's done great. So, yeah, that's an interesting example. But, yeah, so these guys, you know, pitchers are amazing guys. And we watch them carefully. Sometimes we pick on them. Sometimes the media picks on them. But I always say you've got to remember this is an amazing guy, born with a gift, and a very special guy. And I always tell fathers, you know, when he says, oh, my son, he's, you know, so strange, he doesn't talk. I go, excuse me, your son's a pitcher. You know, and I say, hey, he says he never shows emotions. Excuse me, your son's a pitcher. I mean, not every kid and not every man wakes up every day and says, give me the ball. I want to control the whole game, and I'm willing to take the responsibility and the pressure. So, and with that comes a certain type of guy. So that's why I have the greatest respect for pitchers. It's what drew me to wanting to work with them. So anyway, but it'll be interesting to see what happens with these guys, especially Cole, who is, I think, one of who has been an excellent pitcher. I really respect him. So we'll see what happens.
Now, on the Inside China Basin Giants podcast, we had a chance to talk about the San Francisco pitchers having high pitch counts in their series in Chicago when they were swept by the Cubs. Let's listen into the conversation that we had about these Giants pitchers not getting deep into games. Angel, the Giants, boy, they really needed that start by Madison Bumgarner on Tuesday, where he had the complete game with 12 strikeouts. And, you know, what was really amazing about it is that his pitch count really wasn't that high for a guy who had 12 strikeouts. He ended up with just over 100, and that enabled Bruce Bochy to keep him out there. That is the opposite of what happened in Chicago. The Giants starting pitchers just couldn't get deep into the games. Jake Peavy in a first inning outing against the Cubs at 37 pitches. And then it was, you know, downhill from there with all the starters, really, where they would get close to 100 pitches by the time they got to the fourth and fifth inning. And of course, we know that really burns out a bullpen. Javi Lopez of the Giants said that the bullpen was running on E, and you could understand that. These guys are coming into the game in the middle, and you heard from Jeremy Affeldt talking about how tired the relievers were because of that. So, Angel, you know, what happens in this case with pitchers as far as having all those pitches early in the game? How difficult is it to stay in their mechanics when they are getting fatigued within an inning?
Yeah, well, you know, the thing is, first of all, whenever we're looking at a pitcher, the first thing that I'm saying when you're telling me this story is, I want to see what's going to happen next, because we want to always have this, like, general view of what state are our pitchers in. So, for example, let's say Peavy in his next outing does the same thing. That's going to be an entirely different kind of scenario in terms of explaining this. Or was this just one? Was this an outlier where he had that awful start? So one thing when we're evaluating pitchers, we want to see more than one game. But what's interesting is in the series, the way it kept continuing to happen. And also, that's a lot of pitches for a major league pitcher. You hear about that with young kids, but you don't hear about that with the pros. So the deal is that this is where pitchers really have to call on their skill. You know, they don't throw one pitch. They throw one pitch after a time, one pitch after another in a bullpen. So in a bullpen, if a pitcher's throwing 39 pitches, unless he's running that bullpen like innings, which is what I do at certain times of the year, he's throwing one pitch, another pitch. So it's not like he hasn't thrown 35 pitches in a row ever. But in a bullpen, it's completely different than in a game setting. So when you're repeating a high level of performance and you're asked to do it that many times, when normally he's probably off the field, off the mound by 12 to 15 pitches, that's a major demand on his system. And physiologically, when we look at what goes on inside the cell, things were happening that don't normally happen to the pitcher's body. And if the other team isn't having the same kind of day, he's back out on the mound without the proper recovery in between. Now, the hardest part of all this, even though it's physical, is the mental aspect of this. being able to acquire the skills, being able to stay focused, and being able to really blow off the last pitch and the scenario, because the pitcher in his head is trying to explain to himself, why is this happening? It could be the hitter. It could be going to full counts. It could be who knows what. But the main thing is for him being able to draw on his skill of maintaining his focus. So this is a situation where a pitcher is really challenged. And unfortunately, we don't really know the story until now we see their next outing, because it can sometimes reflect that a pitcher isn't doing well. But here's the deal. Most of the time, if it's the pitcher's fault, the coach is going to pull him fairly soon. By the way, how many innings did Peavy make it?
They all four starters in Chicago made it around four or five innings. I think maybe Peavy, I think he got an out in the fifth inning, but none of them were going to be eligible to win the game. They all didn't really do the job that you want, which is to go, you know, at least five to hopefully seven or eight innings.
Yes, I think that, it's a huge strain on the coach when this is happening, especially I can imagine when it happens in the second game and he's starting to wonder about what's going to happen to his bullpen. So, yeah, I think this is an unusual scenario, especially because it happened at so many games in a row. So, it'll be interesting to see what happens in their next few outings. And also, they're going to be looking at it themselves, I am absolutely certain. Did you see any of the pitchers looking like they were coming unraveled on the mound during this?
No, you know, that's the thing about the Giants pitchers. It seems like they're not becoming unraveled. And there were other circumstances besides some of these guys being off. I think Matt Cain has just not been himself. And Chris Heston probably would tell you that he wasn't himself and he was off. But at the same time, I mean, the Cubs hitters were battling, fouling off a lot of pitches. In fact, you can hear what Ryan Vogel's song had to say about that on the podcast that just ran on Tuesday on Inside China Basin. And, you know, it can get frustrating, as Vogel's song was talking about, when you've got hitters doing that. And, of course, umpires, too, are factored in. I thought, you know, sometimes the strike zone gets tighter when you're not throwing a lot of strikes. So all of that kind of factored in.
Well, you know, what's interesting is that this is where, you know, when I think about pitchers getting into situations like this, and this does happen, this is when you're praying that the pitcher has mechanics that are pretty solid. When you've got like crazy mechanics, this is why we as sports scientists want people to do their sports skills in sort of a normal fashion, because it's less fatiguing and it's got not much wobble to it. Meaning, if you're moving efficiently, you're going to move pretty much the same each time. If you've got crazy mechanics, you have a lot of wobble, and then you expose it to like more performance that's required. Like all of a sudden, instead of 15 throws, you're making, 36. Anytime you've got wobble in your mechanics, anytime something strange and it's not precise, you're going to start to fall apart. So you dig yourself into a bigger hole. So you can keep it together mentally, but if your body isn't precise, you have more room for this kind of an error. That's why somebody like a Vogelsong, who's a lot cleaner, probably can handle a high pitch count like this better than somebody who's got some anomalies with their pitching style. So here again, we go back to that, you know, to be a good pitcher and to last through these challenges, you do have to have a lot of different skills. And again, let's wait and see what happens on these guys' next games, because if there's a pattern, whenever we see something go wrong, we can't we evaluate it for what it is, but we can't judge it until we get a bigger picture. And so now we're going to get a chance to see that in the next upcoming games.
And that was our conversation on Inside China Basin, the San Francisco Giants podcast. Angel, let's talk about amateur ball now, and as the summer season ends, the summer ball season is coming to a conclusion, off-season planning comes into play. So what should pitchers and their families be thinking about as far as planning?
Yes, this is the time of the year. I mean, in the last week, I've had more than 20 contacts and people calling me. And again, everyone's asking the question. Summer ball just ended. We've got fall ball starting in September. And, you know, and then we've got spring coming in January or February. What should my son do? Should he take the time off? Should he play on this game? What exactly should he do? And I have the same answer for everyone, which is that it's never cut and dry. And you have to look at the big picture. So I want to talk about it today to educate everyone on the thing they want to do. So the first thing is, there are parts of baseball that are required. So if you're a high school student, you know that you're going to be showing up at a practice somewhere in January. You know you're going to be starting games somewhere in March. And so everybody's got a calendar, and the same thing goes for college students, and the same thing goes probably if you're on a travel team. So you want to always start at the end, reverse engineer your general calendar, and you want to say, okay, well, my son absolutely needs to be have his arm. He needs to be on a team, and he's got to report on January 15th. So we know that's his next commitment, meaning he can't get out of it. You don't have a choice about it. And then you know that what has to happen with any pitcher is he has to have a time to perfect his skills. Everybody has to perfect their skills. We need to do this in life, whether you're a pitcher or just a regular human being with a job. You need to always be perfecting your skills. And when your skill is athletic, you absolutely cannot perfect it while you're performing. If you notice, I mean, have you ever seen a pitcher throw harder? Through even major league pitchers, you ever seen a pitcher who starts out the season throwing 95 and the next thing he's throwing 100? No, you don't see improvement. No. The season's the time to show your goods. Well, you build yourself to improve what you show the next season in the off season. And so everybody needs to improve their skills. You have to understand that you cannot improve while you're facing hitters. Your job is different. It's to win the game. When you are not facing hitters and you're not competing, you can be focused on improving yourself. In other words, now it's about you, not about anything else. So unless you have a time when you're going to be able to do that, when are you going to do it? And that's the question I ask. You know, when fathers tell me, well, he wants to play, I say, put calendars in front of him. Check off the days he'll be on his fall ball team. Then put checks on the January, February start time. Now, ask him to tell you where there would be 8 to 12 to 16 weeks in between that when he could get ready for his next season. And obviously, you know, fall ball sometimes ends at December 1st. So there's no time. And so the question is, when do you have time to fit in this cycle where you're going to improve your skill? If you ask yourself that question and you're looking at calendars, the question answers itself, which is the way I like to direct people. It's not physically possible to have a season of 8 to 16 weeks where you actually can rebuild the body if you're consistently playing and pitching. So when are you going to improve at what you do? And if you've come off of a bad season, it's more important to do this. You know, pitchers go, no, I got to get on another team and kind of, you know, I can't stand that the last thing I did was so bad. Well, guess what? It's not going to be probably much better. So an evaluation has to be done of your last performance. Based on that evaluation, you have to create a needs list, and your training program, your strength training program, should absolutely include all the things you need to build your body and also to improve your mechanics. And off-season does not mean doing another sport where you're using your arm. You see, there's this myth about, oh, you play another sport. That's what experts are saying, but they're not thinking it through. Play another sport if it's not going to use your arm, if it's not going to hurt you, and if it's not going to cut into your off-season training time. And every pitcher needs to be training in the off-season. So now is the time to get out the calendars, reverse engineer all the dates. And by the way, if you sign your kid up for a showcase in October and November, well, you've just blown the off-season because he cannot not pitch or throw and then go to a showcase and be at his best. So you have to either not sign kids up for things in the middle of what should be an off-season, or you don't take an off season, in which case you're going to have to look at when is he going to build, and what's going to happen is you're going to have a pitcher that slides from one season into another. And just so you know, I had an interesting conversation with Joe Demers, who we've talked about many times, and he was a star basketball player. So we had a tough time with him. And I mean, this kid was as good at basketball as at pitching. And from a little kid, he always did this. He finally stopped doing it. And so he's an expert at having an off season where he didn't throw, but he played another sport. And so he couldn't work out. And I asked him the other day to answer me honestly about his perspective on this. And he says, this is what I would tell a pitcher. If you want to show up and have a great spring season, then take an off season. If you don't care about how you perform during the season, then do whatever you want. And that was his answer.
Wow, cool, that's answer, huh? Very mature.
Yeah, it was. I thought it was eloquent, and that's coming from the horse's mouth. So everybody needs to get on this right now. This is the time. You have to do things systematically if you want to get somewhere. Start with what's going to be happening next year, and then reverse engineer it. And again, the question will answer itself as to what you should do in the off season. Also, arms do need a rest. And if you can give an arm a rest, you know, 6 weeks is barely enough. 8 weeks is great. 16 is awesome. And most of my pitchers right now that have always done something, always went late into the off season with like fall ball and then only took a few months off, all of them right now are actually off. And they are excited about putting on more size and getting stronger. So when they throw their first bullpen, you know, with an organized throwing program that has to be factored into returning to play, they're excited about the kind of performance and the way they can improve. So that's what you want to be thinking about.
To punctuate this, a couple of weeks ago, Buster Posey was on our podcast, Inside China Basin, the Giants podcast, and he mentioned that the first thing he noticed about Chris Heston during spring training was that he was much stronger. So the work that Heston did in the offseason really paid off because he had not been able to crack the major leagues. And then, you know, he throws a no-hitter this year and he's in the Giants rotation.
Oh, absolutely. You cannot believe what strength does for a pitcher. And the strength is the gift that keeps on giving. And the strength is, of course, excellent for injury prevention. But when you take a pitcher's mechanics at the end of the season, for example, a father just asked me in an email, should I take a video? Absolutely. Take one right now as the season ends and have your strength coach, you know, well, good luck, but have somebody who knows something about how to correlate a training program to what your needs are as a pitcher. You know, I'll be looking at this kid's video and saying, gee, his front leg looks weak. Well, I don't have to get him on a mound and start working with his front leg, but I can create 6 or 7 exercises he's going to do. And then when he returns to play, we start working with his mechanics. He's got a better front leg. So absolutely, the way to improve your pitching mechanics is to do it with exercises that actually are designed to work the joint and position the body in similar ways that are used in the motion. And it doesn't look like pitching at all. So the pitcher's not in his little, you know, folder called pitching, and he's training, and then he brings a better body to the mound. That if you want to improve the pitch will improve itself if you improve the pitcher who throws the pitch.
All right, Angel, now it's time to talk
velocity.
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 And look at that, triple digits, 101 on our gun.
And for today's segment, we'll talk about getting behind the ball. We hear that all the time. Pitching coaches will say, you know, he's got to get behind the ball. So what does that mean as far as velocity? Because there's so many aspects to improving velocity and keeping up with it. But what about getting behind the ball?
Well, you know, getting behind the ball coming out of a pitching coach's mouth could mean a number of things. But what getting behind the ball means to me is the joint that is the last joint that is involved in actually accelerating the ball out of the hand, which is when being behind the ball is so important. And let's talk about this in terms of a forcing, which is a straight aligned release of the ball from the wrist. And the wrist, you know, they've done a lot of research on all the contribution of the body parts. And while it's hard to do that research and say, oh, that's absolutely 100% accurate, the wrist is considered to contribute about 21% of the velocity to the miles per hour on the ball. Isn't that amazing?
Wow, I never would have guessed that.
I know. When you think about it, so think about this, 90 miles an hour, if it's contributing 21%, you're talking maybe 18 miles per hour is coming from that wrist.
Huh.
Yeah, so the thing about the wrist is it's not just the wrist, because the wrist, you know, if you rotate your hand up and down, palm up, palm down, palm up, palm down, notice that the wrist is following the rotation. So the real deal about having the wrist be in the correct position for a four-seam release is that your forearm not do any kind of crazy rotation. And so this segment is really for people who are pitching coaches, and the coaches, so many coaches write me, and this is something that is probably easier for a coach to understand. But when a pitcher's wrist isn't correct at release, and I recommend that this be something that you always look at and look at on film, because sometimes you see the fingers will roll to the side of a ball. So, Joe, do you know how a four-seam release, is the hand actually the palm of the hand, we could say, is straight facing the catcher. It's not a turned forearm at all. It would be just a flat hand. If you were going to hit your hand against the wall and make sure it all touched the wall, that is that's what we'll call a flat hand, and the wrist actually bends it forward to release the ball. Do you get that?
Oh, yeah.
I was
going to say that a lot of times on my Comcast San Jose Giants broadcast, we're talking about release point. Like, you know, if it's off, a pitcher doesn't seem to have his release point. You have to have a feel for that.
Yes, yes. Well, the release point's where in space it's released, but I am kind of talking about that too. So the ball has to come through the release point, but the wrist needs to act normally, which is that it's called flexion and extension. It's actually going from a position of extension into flexion when the ball is gone.
Okay.
Now, if a pitcher doesn't have that wrist in the right place, let's say it rotates a little, just like you see your hand rotate. If you start to turn it up or you start to turn it down, his fingers will not be on top of the ball and behind it. That palm will not be behind it the way your palm would be hitting the wall. Your hand will kind of rotate to the side normally towards the baby finger, and you're going to be releasing what you want to be a forcing release. And the fingers are actually, your hand looks like it's on the side of the ball twists, because you rotated your forearm. So having the wrist be in the correct position is one of the first things that a coach should look at. And, you know, this whole segment that I do on velocity is, again, to reinforce that you don't have to go out and buy gimmicks. You don't have to think of velocity as abstract. Make sure that everything you're doing in your mechanics is correct. I mean, 21%, if your wrist is off, you don't need to go out and buy something that hangs you off the ceiling to teach you how to throw harder. All you have to do is fix your wrist. So I recommend that the wrist be the first thing people look at. And believe me, it's the first thing I watch. And also my catcher, because sometimes when there's not a correct wrist position, the ball will have funny spin on it, and it's supposed to be a four-seam, and it's spinning like a different pitch, and we don't want that, because then we know we're losing some velocity. So my catcher's feedback on the spin, and also what I'm seeing visually, tells me a lot. So we want that wrist to act normally, and the thing I want to say to pitching coaches is, if you see that hand not behind the ball, and the hand is twisted, that means the forearm is twisted. So you need to look at when he accelerates the ball, does he lead with the elbow? Because if he's leading with the elbow, the forearm will rotate slightly on its own. It's not something the pitcher is doing. In other words, it's the classic example in pitching that if you have a problem with one joint, meaning the wrist isn't acting right, you always look to the joint that's above it, to the action of that joint or the joint above that, because usually something with the shoulder or elbow or both will be the cause of why the forearm rotates slightly and the wrist is not behind the ball. And leading with the elbow is the number one cause of unusual and unnecessary forearm rotation, which rotates the wrist, and then the pitcher's not behind the ball. By correcting that, and this week I corrected that. In the last 2 weeks, I've worked with tons of college guys, and that is the most common error, and their velocity had improved so much they were blown away. And it wasn't really that they were throwing harder. The ball was coming out better because they had their wrist behind it. So the pitcher didn't have to dig deeper. He didn't have to come up with any bells and whistles. He just had to reposition a body part, and his own pitch ended up moving faster. And that's the beauty of working with simple, tiny adjustments. So that's my velocity tip for today. Look at the wrist. Make sure that the wrist is behind the ball. And if it's not, first thing you should check for is leading with the elbow.
All right, Angel, great job. And we will talk again in a couple of weeks. That's pitching mechanics expert Angel Borelli. We'll talk to you again in a couple of weeks. If you have any questions or comments, send an email to angel@jimscience.com. For now, I'm Joe Castellano. Thanks for listening to the Fix Podcast on thesportsvirus.com.